The time is 1 o'clock. This is Radio Ghana. The news presented by Abraham Donko
and Rosemary Gazy.
In this afternoon's headlines, Tripartite Committee reschedules signing of agreement on 2014 minimum and base pay to late afternoon today. Hassan Ayariga suits against David Apasara thrown out on procedural grounds. Media tasked to deepen culture of accountability as Ghana celebrates World Press Freedom Day. Calls for revision of National Council for Tertiary Education Act in view of increasing number of universities and colleges. President Mahama begins 3-day working visit to Kumasi. Ghana Health Service marks 10th anniversary of Child Health Promotion Week with renewed focus on reducing infant mortality. And the separatists in Ukraine down 2 military helicopters. News commentaries on World Press Freedom Day. But first, the summary with Rosemary Gazy.
The Tripartite Committee is expected to conclude negotiations for the 2014 National Minimum Wage and Base Pay for public sector workers by 3 p.m. today. Radio Ghana sources confirmed the negotiations are still ongoing to finalize some knotty issues. The chairman of the newly constituted Council of the National Council for Tertiary Education, NCTE, Professor Clifford Tego, has called for the revision of Act 454 promulgated in 1993 in view of the increasing number of universities and colleges in the country. Professor Tego made the call at the inauguration of the council in Accra. President John Dramani Mahama is to begin a 3-day welcome visit to the Ashanti region. At a media briefing in Accra, spokesperson for the president, Ben Duchimalo, said the president will meet to have discussions with Asantehene and visit other places. And two Ukrainian army helicopters have been shot down by pro-Russian rebels during an anti-terror operation in the eastern city of Slovyansk. Reports indicate that the pilot and serviceman have been killed, with four suspected separatists held and 9 rebel checkpoints seized. Several foreign journalists have also been detained in Slovyansk.
Radio Ghana, the ultimate news reference. We are reliable. The world listens to our voice.
The news now in detail. The much-anticipated formal signing of the agreement by the Tripartite Committee to conclude negotiations for the 2014 National Minimum Wage and Base Pay for Public Sector Workers this morning has been rescheduled to later this afternoon. Radio Ghana sources confirmed that negotiations are still ongoing to finalize some knotty issues. It is hoped that by 3 p.m. today, signatures will be put to the agreement. We also have been joined on the line by our reporter, who is stationed at the Ministry of Employment and Labour Relations, fishing for some information, Yvonne Asari-Ofei. Good afternoon to you, Yvonne.
Hello, good afternoon.
What can you tell us as of now, the atmosphere prevailing at the ministry?
Hello?
Yvonne, can you hear me?
Yes, hello?
Yvonne Asari-Ofei, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Yes, what can you tell us as of now? What is the prevailing condition of the ministry?
Okay. The ministry, the whole atmosphere is calm. There are no media men around. I spoke to the TRO, and then he said negotiations are ongoing, but he did not disclose where the meeting is taking place and when it will end.
And so what other issue did he raise pertaining to the negotiation?
Actually, she says she doesn't want to comment on anything. We should put our fingers crossed and wait for the outcome of the negotiation.
Even obviously, you stumble on some information with regard to people, you know, talking, especially people clustering or grouping. Have you picked up some information around the ministry, especially workers at the ministry? What have you been talking about since morning?
Oh, nothing much. But a lot of people are anticipating that they will come out with a good result.
All right, Yvonne, that will be all for now. That was Yvonne Asari-Ofei, reporter who is stationed at the Ministry of Employment and Labor Relations monitoring affairs with regard to the signing of the agreement for the 2014 minimum wage and base pay.
Yeah, the Ghana Federation of Labor has called on Ghanaians to help the government to rid the public sector payroll of good names. Speaking to Radio Ghana, the General Secretary, Abraham Kunsen, welcomed the hint by President John Mahama to begin an intensive exercise to sanitize the public sector payroll.
Generally, I think it's unfortunate that people look at the negative side and then capitalize on it, amplify it, but they may be doing something somewhere else. In our sector, for instance, sector was on the verge of collapse, but the president has personally intervened, and as we speak, the government has sponsored an outreach gone all over the country, telling people that are coming from work just to educate, to help the industry to stand on its feet. To educate people who are engaged in this pirating and the smuggling and stuff. And we as citizens also have a role to play. Because the president, as an individual, I don't think that he can perform magic or miracles. So it's for us to complement this effort. And look at the bloated payroll thing that he's talking about. And it is true. The biometric machine couldn't streamline this thing. So maybe they have to find another strategy of cleaning this so that people who are not alive do not collect pay. This is part of our problem. And if it's collective.
You heard the General Secretary of Ghana Federation of Labour, Abraham Kunsen.
Away from labour and its related issues, for the past two decades, May 3 every year has been dedicated globally to celebrate the fundamental principles of media freedom. Nations evaluate press freedom around the world, defend the media from attacks on their independence, and pay tribute to journalists who have lost their lives in the exercise of their profession. In Ghana, World Press Freedom Day is being observed today, May 2, with a focus on development, journalism, media safety, and integrity. In the midst of the global media challenge, Rosemary Gezi finds out how safe the Ghanaian journalist is and measures adopted to make workable legal provisions for the media profession so as to enhance journalistic integrity.
The United Nations Plan of Action on the Safety of the Journalist and the Issue of Impunity are premised on two facts: that every journalist killed or neutralized by terror is an observer less of the human condition, and every attack distorts reality by creating a climate of fear and self-censorship. On the global scene, one can recall in recent years the disquieting evidence of the scale and number of attacks against the physical safety of journalists and media workers, as well as incidents affecting the ability to exercise freedom of expression by threats of prosecution, arrest, imprisonment, denial of justice access, and failure to investigate and prosecute crimes against them. Statistics gathered by UNESCO and organizations like Reporters Without Frontiers and the International News Safety Institute testify to the staggering number of journalists and media workers killed or harmed while performing their professional duties. In the midst of these global media challenges, where does Ghana fall, and how safe is a Ghanaian journalist? Hear a few speak based on experiences in both the private and public media.
Never. I've never had any such experience at all. Had the opportunity to be in other countries like Sierra Leone, in the Gambia, but where journalists are really restricted. For me, with the local experience that I've had, I think that journalism really is free in this country.
When you decide to be objective in Ghana, you're either branded political, depending on who is in government and whose work you're criticizing. If you're looking at safety, it shouldn't just be the issue of guns. It should be the issue of freedom to write and not be looked at from a political perspective.
The safety of the journalist is guaranteed in the Ghanaian society, but not totality. It's sometimes your own place of work. We ask ourselves, are we safe when we are working? Do you get protection from your manager when you encounter any problem outside? Not all the time. Sometimes you are let alone to defend yourself if you are caught in the way.
I have been attacked before. I followed the former president, J. Kufuor, to cut the sword for the Kentampo-Techima route. We had accreditation, all right. But in the course of taking pictures, some guy, whether he was from national security or he came and was heckling myself and one other guy. So I think we are safe as far as the laws are concerned. But practically, we still have a long way to go.
some people or persons may become irritated with the job that you are doing, because part of that job is to expose issues that may not be too unsavory to come out. So that places it in some kind of danger. But otherwise, for a Ghanaian journalist, I think we are relatively safe.
From a Ghanaian perspective, the picture may not be all that gloomy. However, one could recall the seizure and sometimes destruction of camera of news crew and assault by some Ghanaian security personnel on media men and women. Here is an excerpt of a Radio Ghana interview with a TV Africa reporter who was a victim of police military brutality.
After I'm done with my interview, I met one policeman and one military. He said that we have to follow him to somewhere. I have no idea, because we are supposed to ask permission before we take shots or we interview someone at a JQG. My camera and my sound man were asked to join the military van. They were asked to remove the shoes so that the shoes would be stretched. But then our wristwatches and the sensors were seized for about 2 hours.
By no exaggeration, this may be just a tip of the iceberg. To ace investigative reporter Anas Arumiyawa Nas, threat on his life is common.
There is no story I have done which has not come without a death threat. I have about 7 places that I sleep, depending on which story I do. There are some times that you don't find me in the country at all. There are some times that you see me hiding at some corners, some farms. You go and hide a bit to make sure that those tempers are cooled down. I just got picked up in Seychelles when I was doing How to Rob Africa. At the airport, I got busted.
So, are the watchmen and women of the media and the relevant authorities protecting the Ghanaian journalists well enough? Cabral Blay Amihie is the chairman of the National Media Commission.
The NMC has tried to engage with all the agencies to ensure that the safety of journalists is guaranteed, but I also appeal to the media itself to join hands with solidarity anytime there is an assault on one media house or person. In other countries, you see the solidarity expressed in a blackout of the agencies that perpetrated the assault. But in Ghana, it's like when you are in trouble, you are on your own. And you have the best platform to make it uncomfortable for anybody to assault the media.
Just like it is done for the legislature, judiciary and the executive, Ghana's constitution devotes chapter 12 to the media, which is not the case for many other professions. Thus, justifying the importance of the media in Ghana's democratic dispensation. What then is the general legal atmosphere like for the media to thrive freely? This is what I asked the media law expert, Dr. Maurice Kwabnampaw.
It is only the media that is insulated from executive control, so their independence is guaranteed. The law says that nobody should interfere with the freedom of the media. Therefore, the constitution makes a wider provision. What is more important is the self-regulatory. Once you are given that freedom, you also have the duty to ensure that you observe your journalist standards by being objective and fair, and also try as much as possible not to violate the laws and the indignities of other side, defaming or disclosing confidential matters as a journalist.
Despite all these provisions, my colleague Anas thinks the safety of the journalist first rests with the journalist.
We don't have to rely on government to give us that safety, because the tools that you have taken on may belong to government. You don't have to allow a businessman to think about your safety, because that tool you are stepping on may belong to that businessman. That initiative of being safe must come from you, the journalist. It is a difficult terrain, but for me, it is about you, the journalist.
Gina Blay speaks for the Private Newspaper Publishers Association of Ghana, Pink Park.
Dialogue is what has to go on. Talking more and taking on persons or institutions or whoever that endangers the process. Which other method can we use but to keep on talking and educating people to be aware of every other person's responsibilities in this society?
Other media personnel are engaged in this piece also have this to offer.
Media houses should ensure that their legal teams are up to the task. The GJA can come in, file for a joinder. In such cases, the National Media Commission, then you know that maybe if I attack somebody in GBC, GBC lawyers will go to court, and maybe graphic lawyers will file to join the case. I think they will respect us.
From the point of view of Television Africa, if we err as media people, we are corrected and should be corrected. At the same time, those wearing uniform and are paid with taxpayers' money should also work within the confines of the law. But the rules are applied in such a way that tomorrow, if GTV, Unique FM or Inside Newspaper is going to do something, they are not treated this way.
The professional body that seeks the welfare of its own and upholds journalistic standards in this country is the Ghana Journalist Association. Afel Money presides over this body.
Development has so many dimensions, and in all dimensions, it will take the PTA to deepen the culture of accountability and accelerate the fight against corruption. When it comes to safety, we are not there to dance to the tune of anybody. We have a constitutional mandate to get people in positions of power to account for their stewardship. And when it comes to integrity, their politicians are not angels, so it's natural to find some few blackish blemishes in the media. So there's a need for us to live above the reproach, for us to have the moral authority to question or to expose wrongdoings in society.
Upon all the talk shows, the UN General Assembly, which established World Press Freedom Day in 1993, supports the motion that promoting the safety of the journalists and fighting impunity must not be constrained to after-the-fact action. Rather, it requires preventive mechanisms and actions to address some of the root causes of violence against journalists and of impunity. Impliedly, there's the need to deal with issues such as corruption, organized crime, and an effective framework for the rule of law so as to respond to negative elements brought to bear by members of this noble profession. For Radio Ghana, I'm Rose Mugezi in Accra. On press freedom, the UN and UNESCO have, in commemoration of World Press Freedom Day, called for an active defense of the rights of journalists and other media workers. Two organizations noted that this is the only way to ensure the independence and protection of the media in the performance of their duty. A statement jointly signed by the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon and UNESCO Director General Irina Bokova said, "Journalism provides a platform for informed discussion across a wide range of development issues, from environmental challenges and scientific progress to gender equality, youth engagement and peace building." We bring you the details of the statement.
The statement said, "Only when journalists are liberated to monitor, investigate and criticize policies and actions can good governance exist." The statement expressed concern that journalists and other media workers in many countries face systematic obstacles to reporting the truth, ranging from censorship, arrest and imprisonment, to intimidation, attacks and even assassination. It's noted that these outrageous abuses show that press freedom and the human rights it underpins are extremely fragile and must be actively defended. The statement explained that the UN General Assembly has unequivocally condemned all attacks and violence against journalists and media workers. It therefore tasks government and all those with influence to act by protecting journalists and other media workers. It calls on all states, societies and individuals to actively defend freedom of expression and press freedom as fundamental rights and as critical contributions to achieving the Millennium Development Goals and advancing the post-2015 development agenda. On the theme, Media Freedom for a Better Future, Shaping the Post-2015 Development Agenda, the statement said the international community has an opportunity to prepare a long-term agenda for sustainable development to succeed the Millennium Development Goals when they end in 2015. It said successfully implementing that agenda will require that all populations enjoy the fundamental rights of freedom of opinion and expression. These rights are essential to democracy, transparency, accountability, and the rule of law.
You heard details of a statement issued by the UN and UNESCO on the eve of 2014 World Press Freedom Day.
As the world marks Press Freedom Day today, Asian investigative journalist Anas Aremio Anas has entreated members of the Inquiry fraternity in Ghana to brace themselves up for more challenges ahead. As he puts it, "Posterity will never forgive the new crop of Ghanaian journalists if they do not sacrifice as was done by their forebears in Ghana's liberation struggle." Sharing his experience on the job with Rosemary Gacy, Anas admitted the risky nature of media work.
"People are dangerous, and they are going to be dangerous. There's nothing we can do about it. If someone is a cocaine dealer, and you are stopping him from making his millions of dollars, you think he's going to take you easy? It is never going to be a smooth path. The earlier we get it straight in our heads, the better."
"But are you a happy person yourself?"
"I believe that we choose professions taking into consideration all the hazards. If you are not a happy person, what can you do? You've chosen it as a profession. If you feel you don't want to do it, get
out." "So just do as part."
"Of course, unless you are not dedicated, unless you don't have that passion for the job you are doing. And if people have come to sacrifice for this country to be where it is, and it is our turn to continue the battle, why should we shudder? If someone has threatened you anonymously, you don't know the person's number, you want to go and report to the police, do you know whether it is the policeman who has even threatened you?"
"But Anas, I won't cut you short. For how long would you live a life like this?"
It's a hazard of a profession. You saw the kitchen is so hot, you get out. You can't do this and expect that nothing is going to happen to you. It has never happened. What? And it's not unique to me. It's all
There's
my
no
friends.
Need asking Look, that you
as I
your
speak
job.
To you, a mm-hmm. friend of mine has just been arrested in Yemen.
What?
Simon, that? He's just been arrested.
And that gives a clue as to how best risk can be minimized in the media profession.
I think the sensitivity of the issue you tackle is key. Identifying the elements in the story you are doing tells you the kind of guns you are dealing with. And it takes you the kind of measures. If it's a drug like MV Benjamin case I did some time back, you know the people in it. You ask yourself, what's their capacity? What can they do? If you're dealing with a Colombian drug lord, you know what you are doing. If you are dealing with the underworld, you know what we are doing. So you've got to look at your story and learn your story. When you learn your story, you come with the measure to ensure that you minimize. You can only minimize.
I like your passion, but how does you think we can help promote journalistic safety, I mean, in Ghana?
Yes, I think that we should not put safety on the doorstep of anybody. We should put it on our doorstep. You are putting it on the doorstep of the police. You are putting it on the doorstep of the national security. You are putting it on the doorstep of who? If you give it to anybody, you never know who is chasing. It could be them who are chasing you. It doesn't mean that intermittently you can work or collaborate with them. Mm-hmm. I collaborate with the police. I collaborate with the national security when I think it's necessary. But I also know that there must be some level that you have to do that up to.
Don't you think even the professional body would need some assistance from them?
Maybe. GJA is number one.
Whatever.
Even the voice, the solidarity is key. Because sometimes we are in very depressing moment in this profession. You are left all alone by yourself and you are hanged by everybody. The insult, you need a big heart. That's why our organizations are very important.
On a special day for the journalists, the World Press Freedom Day, what would you want to tell the public, talking about our safety, rule of law, and journalistic integrity?
It is heartwarming that we live today to see all this. We recall the days when there was a culture of silence. We have chosen to belong to the Inky fraternity. What it means is that there will be battles ahead. We have to tighten our belts. We have to fight, having in our mind that other people have fought. And so prosperity will not forgive us if we don't fight to ensure that we have a proper democracy that will inure to the benefit of generations to come.
You heard ACE investigative journalist Anas Arimi Anas sharing his experience with Rosemary Gazy. I'm still on World Press Freedom Day. My colleague Jonathan Thompson has just returned from the International Press Center where a flag raising ceremony was held as well as a press conference. Welcome back, Jonathan.
Oh, thank you very much.
Well, a critical issue that was raised at the flag raising ceremony was the low remuneration of journalists, you know, in Ghana. What were some of the propositions that were made?
Well, yes, exactly like you said, that actually was the core of the subject that was discussed at the press center today. Many people just came up to talk about the problems, but then arriving at a solution as to how it's going to be tackled was actually not really given much prominence. But then it was like showing out their grief about the issue of low remuneration. It just came out that even at the National Media Commission, for 10 months, they haven't paid. Staff over there have not been paid for 10 months. And Cabral Bley Amihia, the chairman of the NMC, actually highlighted on it. And they said that this is an issue that is affecting all media houses, and especially the Media Commission themselves. And, you know, something needs to be done about it. Also present over there was the Deputy Minister of Information, who stood in for the Minister of Information, Mama Yariga, Felix Kwachifosu. He also touched on the issue of low remuneration, and he said that government will do its best to see what it can do for exactly the public media. And also he touched on the issue about media owners, private media owners especially, to actually revise the pay of their workers. And he also touched on the media fund. He denied media reports that the fund has been mismanaged by government, saying that the fund is intact and would be used more judiciously in the future. He called on the stakeholders like NMC and GJA to come on board more strongly, and this time they should sit down and deliberate critically on how the fund is supposed to be used to better the lots of media practitioners in the country.
Very well, Jonathan, we'll be expecting more in your report. And, have you insured your private property? If no, then expect a task force to ensure compliance. This and other issues coming up in the business segment later in this bulletin.
And moving on, the Fast Track High Court in Accra has struck out the defamation suit brought against the PNC National Treasurer, David Apasura, by the party's 2012 presidential candidate, Hassan Ayariga. Mr. Ayariga filed the suit against Mr. Apasura for his alleged defamatory comments against him in the media. According to the former presidential candidate, Mr. Apasura made comments to the media to the effect that he had misappropriated about 1.6 million cedis meant for campaign in the last general elections. A cost of 1,500 Ghana cedis was awarded against Mr. Ayariga. Lawyer for Mr. Apasura, Eric Osei-Mensah, spoke to Radio Ghana.
Ayariga went to court claiming that he's been defamed by Honorable David Apasura. The court process have rules and regulations pertaining to each of the processes used. When it comes to defamation, one is required by the rule to endorse his writ with sufficient particulars of the publication. Unfortunately, in the case of Honorable Hassan Ayariga, that was not done. So then we filed a motion in court because we were saying that it's not sufficient and it cannot be before the court. So at the end of the day, the court agreed with us and the court said, yes, what we said is true. It did not do the right thing, and for that matter, the writ should not properly be before the court. It's actually up to his lawyer to study his documents and think of what to do next.
Mr. Apasura expressed joy with the ruling.
Well, I'm happy. Certainly, if you go to court and the court tells you you are right, you are free to move around, and then slaps a fine on somebody who was trying to bring some useless case against you, you should be happy. My lawyer was a bit kind to him in the sense that he requested a figure that was a bit low. My lawyer was requesting 2,000, and the judge gave us 1,500. But I believe that my lawyer should have requested something higher, because there is no reason why somebody would just get up. He himself doesn't come to court. The last time we were in court, he wasn't there. Today, he wasn't there. So it's just like he has no case. He has no serious case. And in the form that the comedian may be doing, so just go there.
That was the PNC's National Treasurer, David Apasura.
If you just joined us, you tuned in to Radio Ghana News, networking older 10 regions and beyond, and also in Kitikachi and Tema. Some of the stories you've heard so far: Tripartite Committee reschedules signing of agreement on 2014 minimum and base pay to late afternoon today. Hassan Ayariga suit against David Apasura thrown out on procedural grounds. Media tasked to deepen culture of accountability as Ghana celebrates World Press Freedom Day. And coming up, calls for revision of National Council for Tertiary Education Act in view of increasing number of universities and colleges. President Mahama begins 3-day working visit to Ashanti region. Ghana Health Service marks 10th anniversary of Child Health Promotion Week with renewed focus on reducing infant mortality, and separatists in Ukraine down to military helicopters. Please stay with us.
Radio Ghana, the ultimate news reference. We are reliable. The world listens to our voice.
The News at One continues. Child health and related issues have been at the heart of decision-making over the years. It has also been given prominence in the Millennium Development Goals. The Ghana Health Service will today launch the 10th anniversary of Child Health Promotion Week under the theme, Unite to Save Newborns, A Promise Renewed. Speaking to Radio Ghana, the Ghana National Child Health Coordinator, Dr. Isabella Segu-Moses, said in spite of the seeming odds, many childhood killer diseases have reduced significantly in the country. She said the campaign is
their children, and that resulted in the high death rate that we're recording for children under 5. And so since it's been instituted, immunization rates have gone high steadily, the same with vitamin A supplementation. And similarly, bed net use among under 5 have also increased. And what all these have translated into include a reduction which was recorded in 2008. So between 2003 and 2008, the under 5 mortality rate reduced by 30%. Another achievement is the fact that no measles deaths have been recorded since 2002, and since 2008, there haven't been any wild polio virus cases in the country. We still have mothers or caregivers waiting at home and hoping for a campaign which will bring their services to their doorstep. But these services are rendered throughout the year in all health facilities and even in some outreach points in the community. Another challenge is there are a few people who have become very vocal, and some go even on radio to talk against immunizations and urge mothers not to go for immunizations and some of the other services, saying that these would rather kill their children and that the immunizations we are given are too many. So whilst we are making progress, we are also having plenty to grapple with these challenges.
Dr. Segu Moses also threw some light on the African Vaccination Week. She commended the efforts of African leaders towards the fight against childhood killer diseases.
The Africa Vaccination Week is mainly aimed at increasing coverage of immunization. And for us in Ghana, we had already started Child Health Promotion Week, which also takes on board immunization service. And so since then, we have together marked Africa Vaccination Week and Child Health Promotion Week. And Africa Vaccination Week is also urging all caregivers to seek immunization services and to make sure that children are fully immunized for us in Ghana by 18 months. And we know the successes that we have talked with vaccination in general, and if we should be able to cover all the target group, then we would make a very big reduction in death and disability. No child needs to die from preventable causes. There are interventions to prevent these.
That was the National Child Health Coordinator of the Ghana Health Service, Dr. Isabella Segu Moses.
The newly constituted Council of the National Council for Tertiary Education has called for the revision of Act 454, promulgated in 1993 in view of the increasing number of universities and colleges in the country. The chairman of the council, Professor Clifford Niboy-Tego, made the call at the inauguration in Accra today. Joyce Jechi reports.
The National Council for Tertiary Education, NCTE, Act 454, requires the Council to oversee the proper administration of tertiary institutions in the country. But since its inception in 1993, the tertiary education sector has grown enormously, not only in number of students, but also in institutions, especially private providers, and to a limited extent in the types of programs being offered. It is in this respect that the newly constituted council, headed by Professor Clifford M.B. Tegu of the University of Ghana, called for its review.
We started off in 1993. The University of Ghana, for instance, had just about 15,000 students. Now it has about 40,000 students, maybe a little under 40. And private sector, in 1993, there were very few private providers of tertiary. Now we're talking over 60 different types. The law in 1993 was not fashioned to work on such large numbers. And therefore, there's a need to amend it appropriately, looking at what else is happening in the world.
Inaugurating the council, the Minister of Education, Professor J. Nanu Pukwajimai, entreated a new council to collaborate with the ministry to define the future of teacher training and polytechnic education in the country.
Particularly to charge him to collaborate with the ministry to define a future for teacher training that emphasizes quality above everything. I appreciate your contribution so far in this direction by the many documents that you have produced to guide the migration of colleges of education to full tertiary state. I also acknowledge the measures taken so far to compare polytechnics to polytechnic universities. This is critical. I look forward to polytechnics that focus on the combination of theory and practice where industry merges seamlessly with education and where the polytechnics become the hubs of innovation in this country.
The 19-member council includes Professors Ernest Aite and Yakubu Haruna, representative vice chancellors of Ghana.
Joyce Jechi.
President John Dramani Mahama will this afternoon leave Accra for Kumasi to begin a three-day working visit to the Ashanti region. The president will hold discussions with Asantehene Otunfuo Setutu, visit Ejura, Tepa, and other places. Briefing the media at the Flagstaff House in Accra, the spokesperson for the president, Ben Duchi Malo, said President Mahama is determined to deliver the better Ghana he promised Ghanaians.
Some of the important things the president will be inspecting, visiting, or highlighting are infrastructure projects. Projects that will have to do with roads, projects to do with educational facilities, projects to do with health facilities. Kumasi being the center of the Ashanti region with the Otunfuo there, there is scheduled to be some discussions to be held with the Otunfuo and his chiefs. But one of the fascinating things today when he gets to Kumasi will be to inspect work on the runway project at the Kumasi airport. From now, or as it's already starting, we will be able to have planes landing in the nighttime. That has implications for commercial activities and the impact on commercial and economic activity. Another aspect of the trip will also focus on the Gihok Shoe Factory. For many years, this important national enterprise was left defunct. And then, under this administration, a lot of revival, a lot of revamping has happened. And now employment is being generated at this place. Next year they expect that they will be able to employ more than 500 people. We are producing shoes that are being used by our hardworking soldiers, our police officers, our immigration personnel, our customs officers, and other public institutions. Shoes, sandals, and boots are good enough that they are even beginning to get requests and demands from outside the country. We have the president scheduled to visit the Akate Farms complex. My understanding is that this is the largest poultry farm complex, not just in the Ashanti region, but in the whole of Ghana. And if you recall, in the State of the Nation address, the president mentioned how we're even having to import frozen poultry. But with enterprises like Akate Farms doing well, you can see that we should be having more of these enterprises, and they need to be encouraged. In Ejura, there will be the inspection of road projects and the inspection of electrification. Some 71 communities, I think, in the Ejura Sichidumasi community are benefiting and are going to benefit, if they are not already doing so, from these projects. And then we will have a gathering of students at the Kwame Nkrumah University of Science and Technology.
Ben Dechemalo is a spokesperson for the president.
Meanwhile, the daily media briefing at the presidency is back after being suspended for about 4 months. The spokesperson for the president, Ben Duchimalo, explained that it was suspended to allow for the restructuring of communication from the presidency on his first official media interaction at the Flagstaff House in Accra. Mr. Malo said that the government appointees have been drafted into the program.
For some time now, we didn't have the briefings, but they are back. They are back on a regular basis. They are back so that we can share with you all the relevant, useful, important information about what President John Dramani Mahama and his officials are doing to move this country ahead into prosperity and into development. In addition to these briefings, I and all the other officials, the information minister, his deputies, and other advisors here will be available to answer your questions on a range of issues. But basically, we want them to be as regular as possible, based on key events, based on substance. And so you will benefit from those as we go ahead. I can just count on your cooperation and support that we can all choose to be fair, to be accurate, to be balanced, and to present issues, to present facts, to present information, basically as it should be, so that people have the benefit of getting informed or having the communication about what the president is doing, working hard to get across.
spokesperson for the president, Ben Duche Malo.
The National Chief Imam, Dr. Sheikh Nuhu Shaributu, has celebrated his 91st birthday in Accra, flanked by regional imams and Muslim chiefs and clerics. The Chief Imam acknowledged Quranic recitations, drumming and dancing, which characterized the celebrations. The venue was filled to capacity, creating heavy vehicular traffic. A member of the planning committee and Greater Accra chairman of the PNC, Balami Kankan, throws more light on the celebrations.
He has been an inspirational leader to the country as well. So that was why we organized the birthday for him. He didn't utter the word actually yesterday, all because he's happy, and then he was much more surprised that a youth, we did it for just to show much more appreciation or gratitude to him as well. There's a group called Ansaruddin and Dakuman. Now, we finance the program. You know, God will give you more years ahead, so we will surely be doing it too.
We had Greater Accra Chairman of the PNC, Balami Kankan, throwing more light on the National Chief Imam's birthday celebrations.
Once more, have you insured your private property? If no, then expect a task force to ensure compliance. This is coming up soon in the business news later in this bulletin.
To foreign news now, a car bomb attack has killed 19 people and injured 60 in the Nigerian capital, Abuja. The explosion happened close to a bus station where 70 people were killed in a bomb blast last month. Witnesses said the explosion targeted a police checkpoint near a bus station, though the Islamist militant group Boko Haram claimed responsibility for the fatal explosion last month. No group has said it carried out the attack. Nyanya, where the explosion happened, is a religiously mixed area and it's not clear why the area was targeted. Residents say they are worried about security in the area.
Police in Nigeria have appealed to parents of more than 200 abducted girls to come forward with photographs of their daughters. Borno State Police Chief Tanko Lawan said authorities need to confirm exactly who was missing, as the school records have been burned in the attacks. He said it's now believed that 223 girls are still missing.
The leader of the hand for the missing Malaysian airliner MH370, Angus Houston, says a full search of the suspected crash area could take up to a year. Mr. Houston said he was confident an effective search would find the plane. Officials from Australia, China and Malaysia will meet next week to discuss the ongoing search. A report has revealed a four-hour gap between MH370's disappearance and the start of a search operation. The preliminary report from Malaysia's Transport Ministry also revealed that air traffic controllers did not realize the plane was missing until 17 minutes after it disappeared off radar.
Pro-Russian rebels have shot down two Ukrainian army helicopters during an anti-terror operation in the eastern city of Slovyansk. A pilot and serviceman were killed, four suspected separatists held, and nine rebel checkpoints seized. However, separatists at three Slovyansk checkpoints claim they are still in control there.
News commentary today is on World Press Freedom and calls on media practitioners to be more responsible in their reportage to safeguard the peace of the country. The script, written by Justice Mingle, a journalist, is read by Joyce Enim Ayiku.
Freedom of expression is a fundamental human right guaranteed under UN statutes. Opinions, they say, are like noses. Everybody has one. That is why free media are cherished worldwide, and every year, the basic principles of press freedom are celebrated to protect the media from attacks and guarantee their independence. World Press Freedom Day affords the global community the opportunity to pay homage to journalists who have lost their lives in the exercise of their profession. The day also serves as an occasion to inform citizens about violation of press freedom and to draw attention to the ills of press censorship and condemn media violations like harassment of editors, publishers, media owners and journalists in general. Media practitioners also get the opportunity to reflect on professional ethics and fundamental flaws on their part in the execution of their duties. Many journalists risk death or face jail terms in the course of bringing daily news to the people. Freedom of information promotes transparency and helps in fighting corruption. It is central to good governance, especially in ensuring probity and accountability. In Ghana, a lot has been done to guarantee press freedom and give the media adequate space to thrive. The criminal libel regime was not too long ago repealed to give the media a new lease of life. But for press freedom and media plurality, many people would have been kept in the dark and things happening around the world would have been submerged. Stark illiterates are today able to understand and contribute to national discourse. But for the media, the obnoxious judgment debt payments would not have been exposed. Corrupt practices within JIDA, SADA, and the sale of the drill ship would not have been known. We can cite a lot, but suffice it to say, the media have truly justified their existence. There is no doubt some media personnel have misused their positions to malign and blackmail others. Some practitioners, too, have taken advantage to further their political interests, and these cannot be justified in any way. The serial expose by ace investigative journalist Anas Arimaya Anas of corrupt practices choking the moral fiber of society, however, gives cause for hope. Journalists must desist from using the media to fan ethnic and tribal sentiments. They must eschew the tendency to use their platforms to settle personal scores. The experiences of ace journalists and media owners Kweku Baku and Kwesi Pratt, who were thrown into jail without trial by courts of competent jurisdiction for being critical of a particular regime, are indeed black spots and blots on the integrity of the Ghanaian society. A free press is at the very core of the right to free expression. It safeguards access to knowledge and information. As we mark World Press Freedom Day, let us resolve to respect the rights of others. The pen, they say, is mightier than the sword. Media practitioners should therefore appreciate the power of the tongue, and for that matter, the pen, which can destroy and build at the same time, depending on how it is used. Let us use the media for mass mobilization and not destruction. The media must serve as the mouthpiece of the masses and instruments for the promotion and preservation of our culture. Governments must desist from using state media for propaganda and as pawns to prosecute their agenda. The National Media Commission and the Ghana Journalists Association owe it an obligation to build the capacity of journalists in election reportage. This is one area where, if care is not taken, the media can be lured into plunging this nation into chaos. The broadcast media especially must be cautious and choosy in the kind of people they invite to their discussion programs. The Rwandan experience, where a single word on radio plunged the entire nation into a civil war, must be an eye-opener. Some journalists take their immunities and privileges too far and must be brought in line. We are not in the best of times, and the media must know its boundaries. This is not the time to let loose hot-headed and ambitious politicians to pollute the environment. We definitely have a charge to keep and a nation to protect. Let us not abuse the privilege. News commentary was on World Press Freedom Day. It was written by Justice Mingle, a journalist, and read by Joyce Enim Ayekun.
Now, news just in. I know you've been itching to hear this all day. The Public Services Joint Standing Negotiating Committee, PSJSNC, comprising government, represented by the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission, FWSC, Ministry of Finance and Ministry of Employment and Labor Relations on one hand and organized labor on the other, have today, the 2nd of May 2014, concluded negotiations on public sector wage adjustment and agreed as follows: that in 2014, cost of living allowance, that is COLA, will be paid in lieu of an increase in the base pay on the single spine salary structure. Two, that the COLA will represent 10% of the 2013 basic salary. Three, that the COLA will be paid monthly effective May 2014. And this was initialed by George Smith Graham, Chief Executive of the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission, for and on behalf of government, and also initialed by Kofi Asamoah, Secretary General, Trade Union Congress, TUC, for and on behalf of organized labor. Now, Mercy Darkon is here, latest in business.
Well, that's certainly some good news for us there. Now to business, the National Insurance Commission, NIC, has instituted a task force to compel the private property owners to insure their properties. The commissioner of the NIC, Lydia Barr, tells Business News that although insuring property is compulsory, most property owners do not comply. She noted that this initiative will in the long run benefit owners and protect them from risk.
We are all surrounded by risk of one nature or the other, and we need to ensure we don't. People will spend so much money putting up a house or property, and they will not insure in the event of a fire or collapse. Then they cannot fall on any other, but they will have to start again. But if you have insurance in place, the insurance company will cushion you. Insurances of private commercial is compulsory. The people are not, so I am enforcing it. I've gotten a tax force to go around because you are given a certificate just like motor insurance, which is, so you need to display that you have insured. So we're going to get the police to assist us so that those who fall foul of the law will be prosecuted. So if we were looking forward to a situation where workman's compensation, which is compulsory, but the insurance of it is not compulsory, but we want to engage them in the fact that it makes the insurance of workman's compensation compulsory.
Head the Commissioner of the National Insurance Commission, Lydia Bauer. But what prevents people from insuring their properties? While some say complain about the lack of education on insurance, others have the view that the process is too cumbersome.
Really, it's good to insure your properties because you'll be at work side if you hear a fire, disaster, anything at all can happen. So if you insure your property, wherever you are, you have peace of mind. Anything that happens, you are covered. You just walk and go there. But the most important thing is they should educate the whole public. Me like this, I've not insured my property. I've not been educated. Why should I do that? So if I have the education well, and I know how and why should I register or insure my properties, I have to do it. It needs education.
People are not insuring their properties in Ghana due to the cost involved. Some of the insurance companies too are not being truthful with their clients, especially concerning the domestic houses and all those things. When you build a house, you have to go inform the insurance people. They take every equipment or anything that you have in the house. Find somebody to cost it before you go to the insurance company to insure the place, so that in case of accident, fire or anything, you can call in the insurance company with evidence that you have so that you report it for your claim. And even reporting for that claim too, there are some processes that you have to go through. After if something happens, you are going in for your claim. It's not easy. You'll be running around, chasing them, going up and down, doing a whole lot of things. In the long run, you'll be frustrated and you let the money go.
Those were views of some public on insurance property. And to other stories, the Chartered Institute of Marketing Ghana, CIMG, recorded significant achievements as part of the strategic plan to become the highest professional body of marketing in the country and beyond. At the end of the 2013 financial year, the consultancy wing of the body grew by 50% with total income of 91,655 Ghana cedis as compared to the 17.655 Ghana cedis seen in 2012. The institute is also well positioned to run its own homegrown marketing qualification exams by June this year. The president of CIMG, Shola Safududu, said the achievements have positioned CIMG at a strategic point to rub shoulders with other marketing professional bodies across the globe.
At the beginning of our tenure, we set ourselves some strategic objectives. One of the strategic objectives was to ensure that we take CIMG beyond the shores of Ghana. And this is something that we have achieved. We are very proud of that. So last year, we became a proud member of the African Marketing Confederation. And this means that Ghanaian marketers can actually work together with Nigerian marketers, with Kenyan marketers, with Zimbabwean marketers, with South African marketers. It only will serve to actually develop the marketing profession and the marketing practice in Ghana as more people develop themselves.
You heard the president of the Chartered Institute of Marketing Ghana, Shola Safududu, and on the currency market, the dollar is trading between 2 cedis 79 pesos and 2 cedis 80 pesos. The pound sterling is at 4 cedis 71 pesos and 4 cedis 72 pesos, with the euro at 3 cedis 87 pesos and 3 Cities 88 versus That Ends the Business News with Mercy Dako.
Joshua Niapia is here with the sports news.
Thanks, Abraham. Let's begin with the Division 1 Middle League because the Olympics and this afternoon met at the Babayaro Stadium in the decider in Zone 3 as victory for either side guarantees a return to the Premier League. Both sides are tied on 6 points apiece after winning their previous two games. This playoff could head for a rematch in the event of a draw after normal regulation time. The outcome of the other Zone 3 fixture at the Lenkley Stadium involving Okwaru United and Istanbul will have no bearing on who wins promotion to the top flight competition as they are both out of contention. Chief drama for the Black Stars, Joseph Langabel, is an ardent supporter of Accra Great Olympics. He expects Olympics to beat Temayo this afternoon in Kumasi.
We fight from day one, as of now. And Temayo, they had the lead last year. And Olympics which are 4 years in the region. And you know that place, if you did something like you are in the Daniel Den. Lion was the Daniel Den. You can run move. When the Lion bites you, you stay there as the Nagi Doka. Well, this year, I want to beg Temayo. If you sleep this one for us, next year we will help them to come. Because Olympics is a great game team. Because everybody is wishing Olympics and has to go to play them at the cup here. We play them at the cup, they keep long. I think you said, you know. But if Ghana is going to play them at the cup here, I don't see. Olympics are going to go to the cup. They don't follow up. If you say Olympics has to go to play them at the cup here, who will come? Come on, you have come at the cup here. They have to go. We are going to get Olympics. We are the one who have the key in this country. But definitely, we are begging Parma. Please leave this match for us because no sympathy for the people after the criminal war. This match will be have a war.
You had Black Star Chief Drama, Joseph Langabel, who is a staunch Great Olympics supporter. Referee for the game is Joseph Lante, who will be assisted on the lines by J.B. Smith and Abdul Fatal Zakari with Reginald Labridge as the fourth referee. In tomorrow's contest in Zone 2, table toppers, Feyenoord, need just a point to qualify for the Premier League, having won their two previous games. They face Dunkwa United at their Class 4 Stadium, while Sekede 11-wise take on Good Stars at the Tema Stadium. In boxing, Floyd Mayweather Jr. says he has what he considers the ideal strategy for his fight against Marcos Maidana. The American superstar defense his undefeated status and his WBC welterweight title against the power-punching Maidana, who holds the WBA belt in Las Vegas on Sunday. The 37-year-old Mayweather is the favorite for the title unification bout at the MGM Grand. He has won championship belts in 5 divisions and remained undefeated in 45 professional fights. Maidana, who has a record of 35 wins, 3 losses with 31 by way of knockouts, will make the first defense of his belt. And let's come back to football because Black Stars captain Asamoah last night broke the 100-goal mark for Al Ain after scoring a double in their 2-2 draw with Al Jazeera in the Arabian Gulf League. That's your sports. My name is Joshua Niapia.
And before we part company, let me run you through the closing headlines, but this is an important one for all workers, and it is a news just in. The Public Services Joint Standing Negotiating Committee, comprising government, represented by the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission, Ministry of Finance and Ministry of Employment and Labour Relations on one hand, and organized labour on the other hand, have today, the 2nd of May 2014, concluded negotiations on public sector wage adjustment and agreed as follows. 1. That in 2014, cost of living allowance, COLA, will be paid in lieu of an increase in the base pay on the single spine salary structure. 2. The COLA will represent 10% of the 2013 basic salary. And 3. That the COLA will be paid monthly effective May 2014. This was initialed by George Smith Graham, Chief Executive Officer of the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission, for and on behalf of government, and also Kofi Asamoah, Secretary General of the Trade Union Congress, for and on behalf of organized labor. And on behalf of my co-presenter Rosemary Gazy, I am Abraham Donko. Thanks for being at the other side. Have a good afternoon.